right. Everyone, welcome to MCH 2022, the Abacus stage, and I'm very happy to introduce Brenno De Winter, talking about OpenCat security through cat's eyes. So take it away, Brenno.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, you are going to see a lot of cat pictures in this presentation, so be alert and be aware. If you hate cats, bad luck for you. I'm Brenno De Winter. I'm the harbor master, and at the Ministry of Health, Welfare and Sports, I'm the Chief Security Privacy Operation for the Corona Tech. We talked about it yesterday. Just a quick reminder, this is my cat Brani. Brani, Banani is how I cuddle her. And that was the name of a project, so we started the website. Then people said, like, that's kind of stupid. This is Hero, Brani, and Keiko. In a government system, it looks like this. Then somebody said, like, stop using cat names. Then the minister said, you can use cat names. So this is what we are going to talk about today. And with the Corona Tech, there are a few projects that we have to do. Contact tracing, a contact tracing app. The Brani Banani I talked about, the EU DCC, the QR codes. We built a EHR for hospitals in 6 weeks' time. We have exception routes. We do fraud protection, red teaming, and we're also supporting the other nations in our kingdom, Curaçao, Aruba, and Sint Maarten. So that's a lot to deal with. And then what do we need to do? Of course, the continuous monitoring. And you have all the occasional issues, the shortage of people, the high stress level, especially the political environment that you're in, and then all the tasks you have to do, starting with pen tests and code reviews, ending with your risk assessments, and your weekly starting at 7 p.m. on a Saturday DDoS. It's those standard things you have to deal with all the time. And with a small group of people doing that, that is kind of a hard thing. Now, I've been in security for over 30 years, and over 40 years, nearly 40. And one of the things I've learned from the thousands of incidents I saw is whenever shit hits the fan, a configuration management database is totally different from reality. On the left-hand side, you see Amsterdam in 1538, and that is generally the map when you end up at an incident that they give you. This is Amsterdam in reality. So, yeah, and for my colleague Cleo, sorry, but this is the harsh reality. So this needs to change, and this is an issue for us as well. And then what we're doing to prevent incidents is basically finding the famous needle in a haystack. And as I've shown you, we've got all sorts of projects going on and different nations to support. So basically, I'm searching in more haystacks than basically would fit on a PowerPoint slide. So far, so good. Then there came this day when we had this Corona testing facility that was hacked by the Dutch news outlet RTL News. And basically what they found was a Google Firebase that was in development mode. And yeah, then you can go through all the data. And Parliament said to the minister, you have to investigate all these parties. Yeah, but it's not our job. Yes, you have to. So we started continuous monitoring, and that was for up to 70 companies at the same time. There isn't a single security company that will say, like, oh, sure, we'll help you with this one, because it's highly political sensitive, it's all open. So there we were. So we did a lot of manual scanning in a weekend, found hundreds of vulnerabilities at these facilities. And then the next question came, okay, now we've sent the information over. How do we know for sure that it was all fixed? And then you start scanning again. And then this company will go like, no, there was nothing wrong. It's a false positive. Or it wasn't really a problem. And then we found other stuff as well. For instance, one of these facilities basically said like, okay, we've got secure mail for healthcare applications. We let them be part of our system. And then somebody by accident discovered that they turned that off because you have to buy a subscription of a couple of euros per month. That apparently was too expensive. How do you monitor that altogether? So there were a lot of issues, and it's not even that simple because there's one other issue as well. It's not only about security. It's also about what makes us as team, but also the minister, vulnerable. And that might also be security issues that aren't there. So we stopped talking about security and we started to talk about everything that makes you vulnerable. That really doesn't scale down the problem. So we decided to go for a tool. And since we're talking about vulnerabilities, the Dutch word is kwetsbaarheden, and we want to analyze them, and it's a tool, so we called it the kwetsbaarheden analyse tool. And for behold, that's the Dutch word cat. For the ones that were in my lecture yesterday, this is our team logo. That is perfectly fine for the tool as well. So we learned a couple of lessons. And one of the things that we should do is prove that if we found something, that this is really true. And if something changes, I want to be alerted. And I don't know what can change, but if anything changes, I want to be alerted. And then we found that there were basically no tools that really understood the Dutch context properly, let alone the medical context. So long story short, we needed something that would be able to scan, would be able to do other stuff, but also doesn't violate the Dutch laws. Or one could say, I was looking for an eierlijk in de wolmigzaal. So how do I realize this? Help! So I phoned my friend Jan Klopper and said like, Jan, help! And Jan is a hacker.
Oh. I have aged a bit, yes, it's true. So yeah, we had a problem, and Benno decided on calling me. I don't know why, but you know, these things happen.
Well, I picked you because you were allergic to cats.
This is true, yes. But you didn't know that back then.
Yeah, and the first thing you said was, Brenno, stop throwing data away.
Yep. So what we see in the general availability of security tools is that you start scanning, and the end product is always, you know, the vulnerability that you find. The end product is always this report saying, you have to fix this, you have to fix that. But to get there, you're probably going to, you know, do a lot of queries, collect a lot of information, and all of these tools next to each other do that again and again every time they, you know, do a DNS query, do a, you know, connection to the server, collect some information, parse it in their own way, make their own answers, put the answer in the report, and you get only the answer in the report. And we decided to do it a bit differently and say, okay, each one of these little steps should be a little program by itself, the Unix philosophy. And every time we do one of these little loops, we're going to collect the information, both raw, so we can actually prove that we did it, and we're going to collect whatever comes out of it in the database, in
but
a graph database.
How do we prove it?
Good question. So we decided on running all the tools in containers. Very fancy, but it's not a means to an end in it. It's actually something that helps us. And we run the container, for example, nmap, very simple tool. We run it. We collect the information that goes into the container, the IP address. We collect the version, the hash of the image, and we collect whatever comes out of it. And that gives us a pretty good complete answer of what the tool did. And then we allow someone else, an external party, to sign that package, hash it, sign it, timestamp it, so we actually prove what we did.
So basically the external timestamp service makes sure it's forensically sound.
Correct. And then we do that for every step along the way while collecting information to build this graph.
Yeah, and this graph we built in a cross-time database so that we can see the status of an object in all moments in time. So I can compare an object on January 1st around midnight to the status of the object right now.
Yeah, so we have the graph, and the graph that we have today might be slightly different than the graph we had yesterday. And that allows us to obviously see the differences. But since we have this database of information, we have all the little nodes of information, we can use that graph to then, and only then, start looking for patterns, start looking for objects, start looking for things that we don't like in our graph, in our reality, within our set of business rules.
So if you put everything in objects, you put needles with needles and hay with hay.
Yep.
So if you say, I'm looking for a needle, then basically you can say, hey, here's a batch
here's your bunch of needles, yes.
Okay. The question is, how do we get the data? And we get data with boefjes. You're going to learn a little bit of Dutch as well. Boefje is the Dutch word of rascal. And basically, it's a plugin.
Yeah, so we have a bunch of different plugins, and boefjes is the first one. And it's the one that goes out and gets data. It goes on the internet, or it goes, you know, look at the various tools or APIs, or maybe internal or external databases, and it only, you know, it has a question, it goes and fetches the raw data, doesn't really matter which format it is in, and it collects it to be stored in our forensic database.
And they are just facts.
So in a regular tool, for example, if you run Nmap, and a lot of tools will immediately say, oh, you got port 22 open. Don't do that. I don't care about port, you know, it's fine. Do whatever you want. I get that a pen tester, you know, probably has a reason not to do port 22 on the internet, but that's a business rule. And the business rule comes later.
Because we made a distinction between facts and conclusions. I have got this guy walking around, Alon Kneteman, and he's basically always doing a finding and then saying like, okay, you have to decide if it's important for you or not. So he says like, okay, Brenno, I'm looking at your house. I see smoke coming out of the roof and flames. If this is important to you, the logic step would be to dial 112 and ask for the fire brigade.
Optionally. You know, yeah. I don't know
him,
what your context is.
By the way, I call him my chief conspiracy officer. We have a whole bunch of plugins already. We need a lot more. So I do the shout out now. Come to your open cat tent and join the scene. But then I've got data, and data is still something that is unstructured.
Yep. So by now, we've ran all these boefjes and we collected all this raw information, probably just command line outputs or JSON blobs from somewhere. And in that data is a lot of extra information. We need to process that to actually, you know, make sense of, make needles. And what we do is we have a separate set of plugins, normalizers or whiskers, as we call them. And we, you know, we couple each whisker either to a boefje or to a MIME type and say, oh, let's see, we have text HTML forensic proof. What can we do with that? We have Nmap output. What can we do with that? And we scan that data from the store, check it. And if we find something that we understand, then we add it to the database.
Yeah, but Jan, today I understand only so much. Mm-hmm. And then all these people are going to help, and then I understand
a
lot more.
Yes, I know. That's very interesting. So imagine having this, you know, vault of data that you collected over many, many years over systems that you, you know, have in production. And you know, you had done this as you would, because Brenno asked you to. And it's a good morning, you wake up and you notice there's something wrong with your website. CPUs are spiking every time a browser visits it, and you find a bit of JavaScript code in there, and it's Bitcoin mining. So it's essentially destroying the planet. You find that bit of Bitcoin code, the crypto miner, and you notice that you know, obviously missed it because you didn't know it was there. What you can do from that point on is, you know, collect that information. You write a normalizer that looks for this specific bit of JavaScript, add it to cut, to OpenCut, and it will probably find another few of these, you know, injected bits of HTML or JavaScript in your various sites, because we had already downloaded all the HTML. We had already, you know, collected the proof. So you can immediately start fixing these things. But you also have all the historic information in your forensic store. So now the normalizer can start working backwards over all that collected data and, you know, pinpoint the moment in time, because, you know, we have a cross-time database, where, you know, where we saw that bit of JavaScript for the first time. And this obviously helps with pinpointing, you know, when you were attacked. And by having that, you know, specific moment, you can probably also dumb it down and, you know, look at other log files to see how the hell they came in. Because, you know, seeing a bit of JavaScript in your website is one thing. Knowing how they got in is probably, you know, very expensive.
Yeah. Research, yeah.
A bit of expensive research, yeah.
Yeah, and then we store all the data in bytes. Is that one of my cats? Definitely not. It's Simon's.
Simon's
Simon
here.
Wolf's. But we store it forensically in our data store. And then basically we go for the business rules.
Yeah, so business rules. Very enterprisey name, I know. Business rules are more or less like complex CSS queries. And you have a set of data, you have a tree of information, and what a business rule actually does, we have one on screen here, it says, okay, every time an IP address is added to the graph, I'd like to be ran. So it's more or less a state machine, and it does collect some other additional IP information, so IP port and a website might be related to this IP address. And then we do some Python magic, run over some crates on websites, we collect some ports, and you know, if we have all the ports at this IP address, and we can do this bit of logic saying, okay, if port 80 is open, or port 443 is open, or not, you know, then there's probably something wrong. If so, we'll add a finding, we'll yield a finding to the database. And what this does is it creates a new object in the graph. So if A exists, B must also exist. But A or B or C, you know, this might be more complex queries. We try to keep them simple.
And that opens up, for instance, one possibility is that you say, like, okay, yesterday you had 5 ports open, today it's 12. Maybe your firewall configuration is no longer good.
Yep, but there's more. If I see that you're running a bit of software, for example, WordPress, I can do, you know, a query over all software instances. I can see that you're running WordPress. If this is WordPress, then there must also exist these other 1,568 dependencies. It's deduction. It's very simple. It's a simple business rule, and the business rule feeds on external information, and it, you know, it handles every bit of WordPress in your site or whatever you want.
Yeah,
you can write these yourself.
There was this nice example of this Corona test suite. They were using WordPress, and a news common vulnerability exposure came out, and that basically gave a CVSS score of 9.8, which is kind of serious. So after we downloaded it, I phoned the director of that testing suite, and within 10 minutes of getting the alert, the website was fixed. I can't prove that we prevented the hack, but likely we did.
Yeah, so the business rule was triggered again when we renewed the list of CVEs. And the second that happened, we added all the extra facts to the database.
Yeah, there's only one thing. You know, the boofies get the data. The bytes feed them to the whiskers. The octopus is what we call the system that basically does all the handling of the data. And then ultimately, it ends up with bits. And bits is we run the bits, and then basically you can do your reporting, etc. We've obviously got the interface for that.
One of the interesting things about these bits is that, like I said, they add data and objects back into the graph. They don't have to be findings, but you know they could be. And once you alter the graph, you can then, you know, have another set of bits. looking at that data again and say, oh, wait a minute, if you have that little technical issue, then you're not compliant with, for example, internet.nl. And if you're not compliant with internet.nl, we've added a finding for this saying, oh, you're not compliant with this. Then we can add, you know, another business rule saying, oh, if you're not compliant with internet.nl, you're not compliant with NTA 7516.
7516, which is safe email for the healthcare, yeah.
So you build these really big compliancy questions and, you know, strip them down into smaller technical questions, simple queries.
Yeah, there's only one thing that I'm totally not happy about. And that is, so far I have to do everything myself. Start it, click it. So we've got a scheduler.
Yep. Mula, another cat of one of the developers. Mula is our scheduler, and we're now kind of in, you know, in the volume of search engines. So we have lots of objects, and every object that we add to the graph either triggers a bit or business rule, but they can also be input for another set of Boofies. If we find a host name, doesn't matter where we collected it from, then we can probably do a bunch of things, like, you know, DNS queries. We can try and see if there's any subdomains. We can look for certificates via transparency records. So deciding on which Boofies to run and in what, you know, what order is something that the scheduler does. Also deciding on when to rescan. Some things don't need to be rescanned every day, some do.
So if we're rescanning, then I can also see that if somebody fixed something, it is fixed.
Correct, yeah. So if we see something broken today, we collect proof of that, and by the time we rescan, either manually or through the scheduler, we also collect evidence on when you fixed it, which is obviously very, very useful.
Yeah, but now we need to use it in real life practices, and we need some help for that. Because I don't know how to do that, so I would like to invite Oscar Kuro.
If he still dares.
Well, actually the actual joke is the actual joke is that this is a government-approved picture in an actual interview that I gave. But let's face it, with respect to what my day job is, because my night job is, having fun and doing stuff. But on the day job side, my responsibility is for an entire ministry. It consists out of, depending on how you count, either 11 or 25 or even more organizations. So I know what kind of things are coming to me with respect to how to prove that you're compliant, how to prove that you have your security in control, that you prove that your privacy controls are, if you can test them with technical means, that they are okay.
Yeah, but before we do that, now that we are the three of us, we need to get OpenCat out.
Yeah, and that needs to be published. So, when did we do that?
We did that on July 1st at 2200 hours, and in the next morning we got a call from Dave Day, the nice guys who were before us, and good going, and we had an information disclosure. So I dare to say open source seems to work.
Yeah, so thanks to the work of them that they actually looked at the code so quickly, so fast, and found something that we've missed. That's the thing that I think it's what open source should be.
Well, not just us. I think it speaks to, you know, why we do OpenCut.
Yeah.
Many people have been looking at, you know, at OpenCut, including some companies.
Yeah.
And we all missed it.
And I think this is also one of the examples, again, because we've seen all kinds of other improvements that we've had in the talk that we've had with Brenno and Ron in other days. That open source can work if you actually put your mind to it and do the right steps, and then this can work again. So it's really appreciative.
Okay, but your mission is really to make CAT holistic, MCH.
Make CAT holistic.
I'll slide, you know, I'll let it slide that this one is not with a K.
So one of the goals is that we can scan all the resources that we can actually get from the infrastructure, and if we can't, than use the agent services, which is going to be a lot, because the amount of organizations that you had to deal with the pandemic, that's fine, that's a lot, but the ministry itself has at least... It's a bit bigger, and I've got more suppliers even to deal with, and each of them need to be compliant, and the compliance rules and regulations will improve because of all the
developments. Yeah, and this thing only works if the objects are being filled, so if you've got sufficient assets to add.
Discover assets. Well, this is one of the things that I had to do myself in the weekends, because that's the night job, is try to scan the infrastructure itself and then discover, oh my gosh, we have more APIs, we have more things to do, more things to control, and everything is getting more and more. So we need to have scale in what we do. And this is why I think this is a cool thing that we have now, is that we have the opportunity for scaling.
Yeah, and the cool thing is, if you really understand this, think of Log4j. What did most organizations do? They started scanning the moment the house is on fire.
Collecting where Log4j was even included. I didn't know what it was. I mean, I know Java, but that's about it. But we already knew where it was.
Yeah, so one of the Fridays, if I'm not mistaken, I looked at the code. Kudos to the Northwave guys, because I thought that was the most readable Python implementation of scanning Log4j. Then
it
extending
was.
That, and then, well, telling to the guys, hey, look, I've scanned the entire ministry, at least from what I could get. Please help me. I need to make it into the service.
Yeah, and sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring.
So,
what we also do is we also have to be open to Parliament and state, look, this is what we do. And one of the important things is that we don't just keep it to ourselves, but also make it available for all the other ministries who have the same challenges.
Well, not just ministries. I mean,
and then
we can go big, bigger.
We've got our friends.
And why limit ourselves to that?
Yeah, we've got our friends at CERT. Who are going to scan hospitals with it. So that's kind of cool.
There are so many opportunities.
Yeah. Well, this is basically the overview. If you want to know more, there's time for questions. We deliberately left some time for questions. We can understand if it's hard for you to think about questions. So we thought of a couple of questions for you.
I still have questions, so you should have questions as well.
Exactly. And if you don't dare to ask questions now, come to the Open Cat tent and ask questions then. Any questions?
Hi. I was wondering if there are plans for an API.
Yeah. So the question was if we have any plans for APIs. And I'm guessing you mean to extract data from CAT and use it somewhere else, right?
Yeah, also to configure it.
Sure. So CAT is built out of various containers. As you saw, we have Bytes, the forensic store. You can use and interact that with that. If you skip the Boofies part and inject data right into Bytes, the normals will pick them up. You can also query Bytes as well and get data out of it. Octopus, same story. You could add objects there. You can query Octopus for objects at any time.
Just as with Brani Banani, what we did is make a big problem. That's actually what I learned from Mendel Mobach. If you have a big puzzle, make it a bunch of small puzzles. So what we did is, that's why we have all these little projects, so that you make it a little bit smaller.
Yep.
Congratulations on building and releasing such an excellent tool. I have a question regarding the forensics collection and the keeping data, why discard it. Do you keep PCAPs of all your scans? And if not, why not?
Very good question. Thank you. Yes, it's on the roadmap. And yes, we have promised this. And no, we don't do it yet. So since we're running all the containers with the Boofies in there, is a very logical question and a very logical thing to also collect all the network traffic that is being generated. Because, Nmap might just output something but it might have seen something else. It might have been collecting data. And once we have that data, we could easily make normalizers to scan through that data as well. Just scan through the PCAP files and pick them apart and collect even more data points from there. Because we might not know what we're looking for, until we discover this in the future.
And also have the proof on what kind of data we've actually sent out over the network per scan, or in this case, per container.
So one of the reasons we do this, there's actually two main reasons why we do this. We want to make sure that if we scan, that we have a proof of that we actually scanned. This is something that's missing from lots and lots of pen testing reports. Did you actually scan this? I don't know. So if, for example, you do end mapping on an IP address, and if it doesn't return any IP addresses or ports, does it show up in your pen test? I'm guessing not. How do you prove that you've actually scanned it? By showing that you have the input, you have the output, you probably have the PCAP file somewhere. Then you have actual proof that you've done your work and that you didn't find anything. But if, for some unlikely reason, Nmap is broken in that version and it skips port 22, I want to make sure that I have proof of running that specific version and doing my job.
There is a very good reason for that. There was this one case where I was involved in this incident with a city in the east of the Netherlands. And they got fully ransomware, and then I stumbled across this pen test, and it didn't say that RDP was open. But the funny thing was, when you went to Shodan, I could see that all the days of the pen test, except one or two, this port actually was open. So how can that be? And this is why you want to have that proof.
Excellent answer, thank you. Also, if you are negotiating secure connections like TLS, keep a copy of all the keys that you've negotiated.
We do, yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
So my question was about your CMDB. You said it was not complete enough. Is OpenCut more complete than your CMDB? Or is it more an addition?
I would not say that at this moment, definitely not. But this is why we are focusing on the asset management, because this is what you really want. And of course, we'll draw all your inferences from that.
Modern CMDBs have extra modules to scan the network and have from actual collections of whatever agents or whatever data input, you can then state, oh, look, the CMDB is not complete in these kinds of elements.
But today, today we got actually an offer of somebody who is looking in making a bouffier that connects to a CMDB. So this is what we want to trigger as well.
Yeah, there's two routes there, actually. So you can use, you can use your existing CMDB or admin panel or whatever to feed into OpenCut, saying, hey, I have these assets, please scan them. You could go the other way as well and say, let's scan everything that we can find, and then have a business rule saying, if there's something in the OpenCut in Octopus in the database, which is not present in my CMDB, there's a finding, right? Something's missing in your CMDB. So you can use both ways, is whatever you want to do with it.
You said you scan log files, and is that from outwards inwards? The reason for the question is if you have normal users using the system, you log IP addresses, and then maybe the GDPR comes into play. If you say you have them hashed, subscribed that this is wasn't changed, how do you handle that?
We're just looking at her. We're not just figuring out the answer. So a bunch of questions in there, actually. So yes, we are currently scanning from the outside in, and that means that we're not collecting information on clients, for example. But we are working on having more runtimes, so internal runtimes like in your network, in your VLANs, possibly even agents that are on your server, and collect raw files, collect forensic information, and then we can normalize that and build the graph. Once you start doing that, obviously you might get personal information in there, and then you obviously have to deal with that. The way you do that is defined in the model, and you can, we don't have it yet, but we can probably add something like encrypted models saying this has a, you know, a key rollover after so many months, and it, you know, gets destroyed through that means. At the moment, we don't use any, we don't have any objects that actually collect private information, because we as the ministry don't want to do that. Nothing's stopping you, though, from creating these models and adding these boofies yourself.
Yeah. And also, of course, we already have the namespacing that makes it possible to do internal scanning as well. And yep, we've already got a project name for that, and that is Kitten, Cat on a Pie.
Small cat, kitten.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, and congratulations on this beautiful product. And my question is really, since this does look like a bunch of awesomeness, this is bound to take off. Means that more people want an open cat. And one day a different ministry or hospital is going to come along and says, we would like to get an open cat instance, but we would like to get help with that. Is there a company that can do that for me? And the question is, have you given any thought about a hybrid commercial ecosystem around this? Because it is, the question is going to come.
Yeah.
Jan and I had a lot of Thursday evenings.
So one of the bullet points missing on my slide is serial entrepreneur, because it's so cheesy. My mic is canceling sometimes. But yeah, I have been thinking about this. But obviously, we just want to do this within the industry first. Someone else is bound to, you know, take the source and, you know, take it, build some cloud platform out of this. We don't know. We do have the name for it, though. It's CAS.
Cat as a Service.
So, you know, we have, in fact, done half the work already.
But, Brenno, how much introductions and stories do you tell? How much presentations do you give about CAT to how many people?
We have done like dozens and dozens of presentations.
Per which time frame? Dozens per?
No, I think we've done about 150 demonstrations in the last
So that means you are lighting a fire of enthusiasm.
Oh yeah.
And I would very much, and I'm speaking from experience, I would very much urge you to get the thinking done early.
Bert, it's open, so hey, here's your commercial option.
But I must say, look, open, yeah, but it's not open, look, it's on GitHub, download, clone, do what you want. No. It's the thing that I like about this is that it's being told. There's a story being told. There's a story behind it. Why? A philosophy. And this is also being told at each of the presentations, not just to look how cool this tool is. No, why did we do it? And how do we do it? And this is also one of the first, well, let's face it, tries from a ministry perspective to share something that we've built for ourselves to a wider community, way beyond the scope
But this is not quite the place to hash this out, but let me, I want to tell you, I'm super enthusiastic, and I'm more worried that it will be, that it will get too hot.
I have a theory about this. If you're in this kind of space and you're innovating, what happens is as soon as a commercial company stumbles upon something that makes money, the sales drones come in.
And it could become terrible. But let us.
Yeah.
I'm available for further discussions because I did it once and it nearly failed. So that's
Bert, I've got the feeling that we are going to have some grappa at the Italian embassy later.
I'm looking forward to it.
But. Yeah, thank you.
Actually, this is my cue because we have a grappa emergency.
There is a grappa emergency going on MCH. There is no more grappa at the Italian embassy.
What?
So, tonight at 10, we will be having fun at the Open Cut Village.
Yes.
Because we need to, and because Jan was so kind to present the original design of HAR. This is the original.
This is the only one. My sister is the designer of this. She made this. And we'd like to auction it off for, you know, the good cause. It's the only one in existence, so.
And Niels is doing kick-ass stuff, going back and forth, delivering ambulances to the Ukraine, delivering all sorts of shit there that they really, really need.
Can so I start bidding now?
I have already made a €250 bid.
So 250 from this gentleman here?
Yeah.
Who is offering more? I'm offering 300.
Open Cut Village.
We can do that later.
Yeah. But tonight at 10, Open Cut Village. Guys, come over. We'll have a blast together.
And stealing your mic to auction it off. I have a very serious question.
Ooh.
And that is, what is FreeCut? And how does it work?
FreeCut is stupid because it's the cut website made by Anne Jan, and I don't like it.
The
Let's
funny
go
thing
back.
Is, Anne Jan presented FreeCut to us after we, you know, launched the OpenCut website, and I couldn't resist and put FreeCut .nl in OpenCut, the software, and then asked Anne Jan, "What are these?" And he's like, "Oh, is that still online? Shit." Yeah, exactly. Older than the poster.
So in that case, is the relation between FreeCAD and OpenCAD comparable to the relation between FreeBSD and OpenBSD?
No.
At this moment,
it's complicated.
Less politically charged.
I think it's complicated. That'll be the status.
Okay, I have one statement and one silly question. The first statement is, I have some experience in open source stuff and government. Please listen to Bert. Please.
We will.
So why the Comic Sans? I'll give you the question.
Again.
Well, I was one slide because, to be honest, I actually find the content of the comic slide kind of interesting.
Yeah, the Comic Sans was basically made because I wanted to annoy Anne Jan because I can.
And there we have him.
Hey, Anne Jan, that's so good
that
to see
case,
you.
I still have one more question, and that is, why was FreeCut released 5 minutes before OpenCut?
I'm guessing foresight.
It's complicated.
Thank you.
I guess there are no more questions.
I've got a question, actually. So if we want to implement CAT ourselves, is there a KitKat to help us do that?
The name?
I don't know if you get that one, hopefully. I try.
Yeah.
But, no, that's been really interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So any last comments? And the auction, just to repeat.
Well, I just wonder, I expected really somebody to ask the question, is MCH 2022 in control?
On,
but nobody
us.
Did.
Tell us, we've got a few minutes.
Okay.
Oh,
no,
far.
We don't think so, because those are all the findings, but there we go.
I think that's the false positives.
Unlikely.
Thank you very much indeed for a very interesting talk. Thank you.